Suddenly, potatoes rocketed at us. I heard laughter from inside the kitchen. "Do you have to throw them?" I said, moving toward the dark doorway. The door closed. "Look, there are several," said Jonas, running to pick them up. A door opened. A tin can smacked against my forehead. I heard clapping and felt a warm dripping above my eyebrow. Cans and garbage rained down around us. The NKVD amused themselves by pelting helpless children with garbage. "They're drunk! Hurry up, let's go, before they start shooting!" I said, not wanting to drop the file. "Wait, some of it is food," said Jonas, frantically collecting things off the ground. A sack flew out and hit Jonas in the shoulder, knocking him over. A cheer erupted from behind the door. "Jonas!" I ran to him. Something wet hit me in the face. Kretzky appeared at the door and said something. "Hurry," said Jonas. "He says we're stealing food and he's going to report us." We scurried around like hens in a yard, craning our necks for anything that touched the ground. I reached up to clear the smelly slop from my eyes. Rotten potato peels. I put my head down and ate them. "Fascist svinja!" yelled Kretzky. He slammed the door. I gathered things in my skirt, holding my arm against my coat and the file. I took all I could carry, even empty cans for residue. The left side of my forehead throbbed. I reached up and felt a big wet goose egg. Andrus emerged from the side of the building. He looked around.
"I see you got something for your drawing," he said.
I ignored him and quickly began snatching the potatoes with my free hand. I stuffed them into my pockets and skirt, desperate to get each one. Andrus moved to lift the sack I was straddling. He put his hand on my shoulder.
"Don't worry," he said gently. "We'll get it all."
I looked up at him.
"You're bleeding."
"It's nothing, I'm fine," I said, pulling potato rot from my hair. Jonas scooped up the bread. Andrus picked up the big sack. "What's in that?" asked Jonas.
"Flour," said Andrus.
"I'll carry it back for you."
"Did you hurt your arm?"
asked Andrus, watching me clutch my coat. I shook my head.
We trudged through the snow, in silence.
Chapter 56.
"Hurry, Jonas," I said as soon as we were a safe distance from the NKVD building. "Mother will be worried. Run ahead and let her know we're okay." Jonas ran toward our shack. I slowed my pace. "They have a file on us," I said, watching my brother shrink in the distance.
"They have files on everyone," said Andrus.
He tossed the sack of flour up, readjusting it on his shoulder. "Maybe you could help me with something," I said. Andrus shook his head, almost laughing.
"I can't steal a file, Lina. That's a lot different from wood or a can of tomatoes. It's one thing to get in the kitchen, but..."
"I don't need you to take the file," I said, stopping short of our shack.
"What?"
Andrus stopped. "I don't need you to steal the file." I looked around and opened my coat slightly. "I already have it," I whispered. "It was on the commander's desk. I need you to put it back once I've read it."
Shock flooded Andrus's face. His head snapped from side to side to see if we were alone.
He pulled me behind a shack.
"What's wrong with you? Do you want to get yourself killed?"
he whispered. "The bald man said it's all in our files. Where we were sent? Perhaps what happened to the rest of our family? It's all right here." I crouched down, letting go of the potatoes and other items I had been carrying. I reached into my coat.
"Lina, you can't do this. Give me the file. I'm taking it back."
Footsteps approached. Andrus stood in front of me. Someone passed. He dropped the sack and reached for the file. I moved away from him and opened it. My hands trembled. There were photos of our family and papers attached to the folder. My heart sank. It was all in Russian. I turned to Andrus. He grabbed the file from my hand.
"Please," I begged. "Tell me what it says."
"Are you really that selfish? Or are you just stupid? They'll kill you and your family," he said.
"No," I grabbed his arm. "Please, Andrus, It might help me find my father. You heard him on the train. I can help him find us. I can send him my drawings. I just need to know where he is. I know you can understand.
He stared at me and then opened the file. I don't read Russian that well. His eyes quickly scanned the papers.
What does it say?
Students at the academy, he said, looking over his shoulder. This word is artist. That's you, your father, he said, putting his finger under a word.
Yes, what?
I said. Location. I huddled near Andrus.
What does it say?
Krasnoyarsk prison.
Papa's in Krasnoyarsk?
I remembered drawing Krasnoyarsk on the map for the NKVD. I think this word means offense, or charge, he said, pointing to some writing. It says your father is...
Is what?
I don't know this word, whispered Andrus. He snapped the file shut and stuffed it in his coat.
What else does it say?
That's all it says.
Can you find out what the word is? The one about Papa?
What if I get caught with this? Said Andrus, suddenly full of anger. What if he did get caught? What would they do to him? He turned to walk away. I grabbed him.
Thank you,
I said.
Thank you so much.
He nodded, pulling away from me. Chapter 57. Mother was delighted with the food. We decided to eat most of it immediately, just in case the NKVD tried to take it back. The canned sardines were delicious, well worth the tender gash on my head. Their oil felt silky against my tongue. Mother gave Ilyushka a potato. She invited her to share our meal. She knew Ilyushka was less likely to report that we had food if she ate some herself. I hated that Mother shared with Ilyushka. She had tried to throw Jonas out into the snow when he was sick. She didn't think twice about stealing from us. She never shared her food. She ate egg after egg right in front of us. Yet Mother insisted on sharing with her. I worried about Andrus, hoping he was able to return the file unnoticed. And what was the word that he had pointed to? The one he thought was offense or charge. I refused to believe that Papa had done something wrong. I turned it over in my head. Mrs. Raskunas worked at the university with Papa. She wasn't deported. I saw her peeking out of her window the night we were taken away. So not everyone from the university was deported. Why Papa? I wanted to tell Mother that Papa was sent to Krasnoyarsk, but I couldn't. She'd be too worried about him being in prison, and she'd be angry that I had stolen the file. She would also worry about Andrus having it. I worried about Andrus. That night, I tore more drawings from my tablet and hid them with the others under my suitcase lining. I had 2 pages left. My pencil hovered around the edge of the paper. I looked up. Mother and Jonas spoke quietly. I rolled the pencil between my fingers. I drew a collar. A snake began to draw itself, coiling upward. I quickly scratched it out. The next afternoon, I saw Andrus on my way back from work. I scanned his face for news of the file. He nodded. My shoulders relaxed. He had returned it. But had he found the meaning of the word? I smiled at him. He shook his head, annoyed, but kind of smiled, too. I found a thin, flat piece of birch and brought it back to our hut. At night, I decorated the edges with Lithuanian embroidery patterns. I drew a picture of our house and Kaunas on it, along with other symbols of Lithuania. On the bottom, I wrote, "Deliver to Krasnoyarsk prison." With love, for Miss Altai. I included my scribble signature, along with the date.
What am I supposed to do with it?
Asked the grouchy woman when I approached her.
Just give it to a Lithuanian you see in the village, I said. Tell them to pass it on. It has to get to Krasnoyarsk.
The grouchy woman looked at my drawings of the Lithuanian coat of arms, Trakai Castle, our patron saint, Kazimir, and the stork, the national bird of Lithuania. Here, I said, extending a tattered piece of clothing bunched in my hand. Maybe one of your girls can use this underskirt. I know it's not much, but
Keep your slip, said the grouchy woman, still looking at my drawings. I'll pass it along.
Chapter 58. March 22nd. My 16th birthday. My forgotten birthday. Mother and Jonas left the shack for work. Neither acknowledged my birthday. What did I expect, a celebration? We barely had a scrap to eat. Mother traded what she could for stamps to mail letters to Papa. I wouldn't say anything about it to Mother. She would feel horrible for having forgotten. The month before, I had reminded her it was Grandma's birthday. She felt guilty for days. After all, how could she forget her own mother's birthday? I spent the day piling wood, imagining the party I'd have if we were still in Lithuania. People in school would wish me a happy birthday. Our family would dress in some of our finest clothes. Papa's friends would take photographs. We'd go to an expensive restaurant in Kaunas. The day would feel special. Different. Joanna would send a present. I thought of my last birthday. Papa was late coming to the restaurant. I told him I had received nothing from Joanna. I noticed that he stiffened at the mention of my cousin. She's probably just busy, he had said. Stalin had taken my home and my father. Now he had taken my birthday. My feet dragged as I walked through the snow after work. I stopped for my ration. Jonas was in line.
Hurry, he said. Mrs. Rimmis received a letter from Lithuania. It's a thick one.
Today? I asked.
Yes, he said. Hurry, meet me at the Bald Man Shack.
The line moved slowly. I thought about the last time Mrs. Rimmis had received a letter. It was warm in her crowded shack. I wondered if Andrus would be there. I got my ration and ran through the snow to the Bald Man's shack. Everyone huddled in a ball. I saw Jonas. I walked up behind him.
What did I miss? I whispered.
Just this, he said. The crowd parted. I saw Mother. Happy birthday! Everyone yelled. A lump bobbed in my throat. Happy birthday, darling, said Mother, throwing her arms around me. Happy birthday, Lina, said Jonas. Did you think we forgot? I did. I thought you forgot. We didn't forget, said Mother with a squeeze. I looked around for Andrus. He wasn't there. They sang a birthday song. We sat and ate our bread together. The man who wound his watch told the story of his 16th birthday. Mrs. Rimmis told of the buttercream frosting she made for cakes. She stood and demonstrated how she'd positioned the bowl on her hip and whipped the spatula. Frosting. I remembered the creamy consistency and sweetness.
We have a present for you, said Jonas.
A present? I asked. Well, it's not wrapped, but yes, it's a present, said Mother. Mrs. Rimmis handed me a bundle. It was a pad of paper and a stub of a pencil.
Thank you. Where did you get it? I asked.
We can't tell our secrets, said Mother. The paper is ruled, but it's all we could find. Oh, it's wonderful, I said. It doesn't matter that it has lines.
You'll draw straighter,
Jonas smiled. You must draw something to remember your birthday. This will be a unique one. Soon this will all be a memory, said Mother.
A memory? Bah! Enough celebration. Get out. I'm tired, complained the bald man.
Thank you for hosting my party, I said. He grimaced and flapped his hands, pushing us out the door. We linked arms and started toward Olyushka's. I looked up at the frosty gray sky. More snow was on the way. Lina. Andrus stepped out from behind the bald man's shack. Mother and Jonas waved and continued on without me. Happy birthday, he said. I moved toward him. How did you know? Jonas told me. The tip of his nose was red. You can come inside, you know, I told him.
I know.
Have you figured out the word in the file? I asked.
No, I didn't come for that.
I came to give you this. Andrus revealed something from behind his back. It was wrapped in a cloth. Happy birthday.
You brought me something? Thank you. I don't even know when your birthday is.
I took the package. Andrus turned to leave.
Wait! Sit down,
I said, motioning to a log in front of a shack. We sat next to each other. Andrus's brow creased with uncertainty. I pulled the cloth back. I looked at him.
I don't know what to say, I stuttered.
Say you like it.
I do like it.
I loved it.
It was a book. Dickens.
It's not the Pickwick Papers. That's the one I smoked, right? He laughed. This one's Dombey and Son. It was the only Dickens I could find.
He blew into his gloved hands and rubbed them together. His warm breath swirled like smoke in the cold air. It's perfect, I said. I opened the book. It was printed in Russian.
So, now you have to learn Russian or you won't be able to read your present, he said. I mocked a scowl.
Where did you get it?
He pulled in a breath, shaking his head. Uh-oh. Should we smoke it right away? Maybe, he said. I tried to read a bit of it. He faked a yawn. I laughed.
Well, Dickens can be a little slow at first.
I stared at the book in my lap. The burgundy binding felt smooth and tight. The title was etched deep in gold print.
It was beautiful. A real present. The perfect present.
Suddenly, it felt like my birthday. I looked at Andrus.
Thank you, I said. I put my mittens on his cheeks. I pulled his face to mine and kissed him. His nose was cold. His lips were warm and his skin smelled clean. My stomach fluttered. I pulled back, looking at his handsome face, and tried to remember how to breathe.
Really? Thank you. It's a wonderful present.
Andrus sat on the log, stunned. I stood up.
It's November 20th, he said.
What?
My birthday.
I'll remember that. Good night. I turned and walked away. Snow began to fall.
Don't smoke it all at once, I heard behind me.
I won't, I called over my shoulder, hugging my treasure.
Chapter 59. We dug through the snow and slosh for the sun to reach our little potato patch. The temperatures inched just above freezing according to a thermometer outside the Kolkhoz office. I could unbutton my coat. Mother ran into the hut, her face flushed, gripping an envelope. Her hand trembled. She had received a letter from our housekeeper's cousin, telling her through coded words that Papa was alive. She held me tight, saying yes and thank you, over and over. The letter made no mention of his location. I looked at the crease within her brow, newly carved since we had been deported. It was unfair to keep it from her. I told Mother that I had seen the file, and that Papa was in Krasnoyarsk. Her first reaction was of anger, shocked at the risk I took. But over the following days, her posture improved and her voice carried a lilt of happiness.
He'll find us, Mother, he will, I told her, thinking of the piece of birch already en route to Papa.
Activity increased in the camp. Deliveries came from Moscow. Andrus said some contained boxes of files. Guards left, new ones arrived. I wished Kretzky would leave. I hated the constant fear, wondering if he would throw something at me. He did not leave. I noticed he and Andrus spoke from time to time. One day, while I walked to chop wood, trucks arrived with officers. I didn't recognize them. Their uniforms had different coloring. They walked with a tight gait. After being forced to draw the commander, I drew whatever I saw or felt. Some drawings, like Munch's, were full of pain.
others hopeful, longing. All were an accurate portrayal and would certainly be considered anti-Soviet. At night, I would read half a page of Dombey and Son. I labored over each word. I constantly asked Mother to translate. "It's old. Very proper Russian," said Mother. "If you learn to speak from this book, you'll sound like a scholar." Andrus began to meet me in the ration line. I chopped a little harder, hoping the day would move faster. I washed my face at night in the snow. I tried to brush my teeth and comb through my tangled hair.
"So how many pages have you smoked so far?"
his voice whispered behind me. "Almost 10," I said over my shoulder.
"You must be nearly fluent in Russian by now,"
he teased, pulling on my hat. "Perestan," I said, smiling.
"Stop."
"Ah, very good. So you really did learn something. What about this word?"
"Krasivaya."
I turned around. "What does that mean?"
"You'll have to learn it," said Andrus.
"Okay," I said. "I will."
"Without asking your mother," he said.
"Promise?" "All right," I said. "Say it again."
"Krasivaya."
"Really, you have to learn it on your own." "I will."
"We'll see," he said, smiling as he walked away.
Chapter 60. It was the first warm day of spring. Andrus met me in the ration line. "I got through 2 pages last night, all by myself," I boasted, taking my chunk of bread. Andrus wasn't smiling.
"Lina,"
he said, taking my arm.
"What?" "Not here."
We walked away from the line. Andrus didn't speak. He gently steered me behind a nearby shack.
"What is it?"
I asked. He looked over his shoulder.
"What's going on?"
"They're moving people,"
he whispered.
"The NKVD?"
"Yes."
"Where?"
I asked.
"I don't know yet."
The light that had bounced through his eyes the day before had disappeared.
"Why are they moving people? How did you find out?"
"Lina,"
he said, holding onto my arm. His expression frightened me.
"What is it?"
He took my hand.
"You're on the list."
"What list?"
"The list of people who are being moved. Jonas and your mother are on it too."
"Do they know I took the file?"
I asked. He shook his head.
"Who told you?"
"That's all I know," he said.
He looked down. His hand squeezed mine. I looked at our clasped hands.
"Andrus,"
I said slowly.
"Are you on the list?"
He looked up. He shook his head. I dropped his hand. I ran past the tattered shacks. Mother, I had to tell Mother. Where were they taking us? Was it because we hadn't signed? Who else was on the list?
"Lina, calm yourself," said Mother. "Slow down." "They're taking us away. Andrus said so," I panted.
"Maybe we're going home," said Jonas.
"Exactly,"
said Mother.
"Maybe we're going someplace better."
"Maybe we're going to be with Papa," said Jonas.
"Mother, we haven't signed. You didn't see the look on Andrus's face," I said.
"Where is Andrus?" asked Jonas.
"I don't know," I said. "He's not on the list."
Mother left the shack to find Andrus and Mrs. Rimmis. I paced the floor. The floorboards creaked, complaining of Papa's pacing.
"Sweden is preferable," said Mother.
"It's not possible," explained Papa. "Germany is their only choice."
"Kostis, we have to help," said Mother.
"We are helping. They'll take a train to Poland and we'll arrange passage to Germany from there."
"And the papers?" asked Mother.
"Arranged."
"I would feel better if it were Sweden," said Mother.
"It cannot be. It's Germany."
"Who's going to Germany?"
I yelled from the dining room. Silence.
"Lina, I didn't know you were in here," said Mother, coming out of the kitchen.
"I'm doing my homework."
"A colleague of your father's is going to Germany,"
said Mother. I'll be back for dinner.
Papa kissed Mother on the cheek and rushed out the back door. News of the impending move burned through the camp like a spark riding gasoline. People dashed in and out of huts, speculations flew. Stories changed each minute, others cropped up the next. Someone claimed additional NKVD had arrived in camp. Someone else said they saw a group of NKVD loading their rifles. No one knew the truth. Ulyushka threw open the door of the shack. She spoke to Jonas and quickly exited. She's looking for Mother, said Jonas. Does she know something? I asked. Miss Grebus ran into our shack.
Where is your mother? She asked.
She went to find Andrus and Mrs. Rimmis, I said.
Mrs. Rimmis is with us. Bring your mother to the bald man's shack.
We waited. I didn't know what to do. Should I put everything in my suitcase? Were we really leaving? Could Jonas be right? Could we be going home? We hadn't signed. I couldn't shake the image of concern on Andrus's face when he told me we were on the list. How did he know we were on it? How did he know he wasn't? Mother returned. People stood elbow to elbow in the bald man's shack. The volume grew as we entered.
Shh, said the man who wound his watch. Everyone, please sit down. Let's hear from Elena.
It's true, said Mother. There is a list, and there is word of moving people. How did Andrus find out about it? Asked Jonas.
Mrs. Arvidus received some information. Mother looked away. I don't know how she came by it.
I am on the list. So are my children. Mrs. Rimmis is on the list. Miss Grebus, you are not on the list. That's all I know.
People quickly began asking if they were on the list.
Stop your yapping. She said that's all she knows, said the bald man.
Interesting, said the man who wound his watch. Miss Grebus is not on the list. She hasn't signed. So, it's not just those who refuse to sign.
Please, choked Miss Grebus. Don't leave me here.
Quit blubbering. We don't know what's happening yet, said the bald man.
I tried to find the pattern. How were they sorting us for the impending move? But there wasn't a pattern. Stalin's psychology of terror seemed to rely on never knowing what to expect.
We must be prepared, said Mr. Lucas, winding his watch. Think of the journey we had in coming here. We're not nearly as strong. If we are to face that journey again, we must be prepared.
You don't think they'll put us back in the train cars, do you? Gasped Mrs. Rimmis. A wave of cries rippled through the group. How could we be prepared? None of us had food. We were malnourished, weak. We had sold nearly all of our valuables.
If it's true, and I am not leaving, I will sign the papers, announced Miss Grebus.
No, you mustn't, I said.
Stop, said Mrs. Rimmis. You're not thinking clearly.
I'm thinking very clearly, said Miss Grebus, sniffing back tears. If you and Elena are gone, I will be nearly alone. If I sign, they will allow me to teach the children in the camp. Even if my Russian is poor, I can still teach. And if I'm alone, I'll need to have access to the village. They'll grant access only if I sign. That way, I can continue writing letters for all of us. It must be done.
Let's not make any decisions yet, said Mother, patting Miss Grebus's hands.
Maybe it's all a mistake, said Mrs. Rimmis.
Mother looked down and closed her eyes.
Chapter 61. Andrus came to our shack late that night and spoke to Mother outside.
Andrus would like to speak with you, said Mother.
Ulyushka said something to her in Russian. Mother nodded.
I walked outside. Andrus stood with his hands in his pockets.
Hi.
He chipped at the dirt with his shoe. Hi. I stared down the row of shacks. A breeze lifted the ends of my hair. It's getting warm, I finally said.
Yeah, said Andrus, looking up at the sky. Let's walk.
The snow had melted and the mud had firmed. Neither one of us spoke until we passed the bald man's shack. Do you know where they're taking us? I asked.
I think they're transferring you to another camp. It seems that some of the NKVD are going too. They're packing up.
I can't stop thinking of my father and what it said in the file.
Lina, I figured out what the word in the file means, said Andrus.
I stopped, looking to him for the answer. He reached out and gently moved my hair away from my eyes.
It means accessory, said Andrus.
Accessory?
It probably means that he tried to help people who were in danger, said Andrus.
Well, of course he'd do that. But you don't think he actually committed some kind of crime, do you?
Of course not. We're not criminals, he said. Well, maybe you are. Stealing logs, pens, and files. He looked over at me, suppressing a grin.
Oh, you should talk. Tomatoes, chocolate, vodka.
Yeah, and who knows what else, said Andrus.
He took my hand and kissed it. We walked hand in hand, neither one of us speaking. My pace slowed. Andrus, I'm scared. He stopped and turned to me.
No, don't be scared. Don't give them anything. Lina, not even your fear.
I can't help it. I'm not even used to this camp. I miss home. I miss my father. I miss school. I miss my cousin. My breathing quickened.
Shh, said Andrus. He pulled me to his chest. Be careful who you talk to. Don't let your guard down, okay? He whispered.
His arms tightened around me.
I don't want to go, I said.
We stood, quiet. How did I get here? How did I end up in the arms of a boy I barely knew, but knew I didn't want to lose? I wondered what I would have thought of Andrus in Lithuania. Would I have liked him? Would he have liked me?
I don't want you to go, he finally whispered, barely audible.
I closed my eyes. Andrus, we have to get back home.
I know, he said. We will.
He took my hand and we started back. I'll write to you. I'll send letters to the village, I said. He nodded. We arrived back at our shack. Wait a minute, I told him. I went inside. I gathered all of my drawings, even the ones on small scraps, from underneath the lining in my suitcase. I tore papers out of my sketchbook. I walked outside and handed the stack to Andrus. The drawing of his mother, her face bruised, slipped out and wafted to the ground. Her eyes stared up at us from the dirt.
What are you doing?
He asked, quickly picking up the drawing. Hide them. Keep them safe for me, I said, putting my hands on top of his. I don't know where we're going. I don't want them to be destroyed. There's so much of me, of all of us, in these drawings. Can you find a safe place for them? He nodded. There's a loose floorboard under my bunk. It's where I hid Dombey and son. Lina, he said slowly, looking down at the drawings. You have to keep drawing. My mother says the world has no idea what the Soviets are doing to us. No one knows what our fathers have sacrificed. If other countries knew, they might help. I will, I said. And I've been writing it all down. That's why you have to keep these safe for me. Hide them. He nodded. Just promise me you'll be careful, he said. Don't be stupid and go looking for files or running under any trains. We stared at each other. So, don't smoke any books without me, okay? He said. I smiled. I won't. How long do you think we have?
I don't know. It could be any day.
I stood on my toes and kissed him.
Krasivia, he said into my ear, his nose tracing along my cheek. Have you learned it yet? He kissed my neck. Not yet, I said, closing my eyes. Andrus exhaled and stepped back slowly. Tell Jonas I'll come by to see him in the morning, okay? I nodded, the touch of his lips still warm against my neck. He walked away in the dark, clutching my drawings under his coat. He turned and looked over his shoulder. I waved. He waved back. His silhouette became smaller and smaller, and then finally faded into the darkness.
Chapter 62. They came before sunrise. They burst into our shack waving rifles just as they had burst into our home 10 months before. We had only minutes. This time, I was ready. Alyushka rose from her pallet. She barked at Mother. Stop yelling! We're leaving! I told her. She began handing Mother potatoes, beets, and other food she had stored. She handed Jonas a thick animal hide to put in his suitcase. She gave me a pencil. I couldn't believe it. Why was she giving us food? Mother tried to hug her. They barely embraced. Alyushka pushed her away and stomped out. The NKVD told us to stand and wait outside our shack. The man who wound his watch came walking toward us, suitcase in hand. He was on the list. Mrs. Rimmis was behind him, followed by the girl with the dolly, her mother, and a stream of other people. We began a slow procession toward the Kolkhoz office, dragging our belongings. Faces looked years older than when we had arrived 10 months before. Did I look older, too? Miss Grebus ran to us, crying.
They've sent for you. You're going to America. I just know it. Please don't forget about me, she begged. Please don't let me waste away here. I want to go home.
Mother and Mrs. Rimmis hugged Miss Grebus. They assured her they would not forget her. I would never forget her, or the beets she hid under her dress. We trudged on. I heard Miss Grebus's crying fade behind us. The grouchy woman walked out of her shack. She held up a withered hand and nodded. Her daughters clung to her legs. I remembered her, hiding the bathroom hole on the train with her girth. She had lost so much weight. My eyes scanned for Andrus. I had Dombey and Son tucked safely in my suitcase next to our family picture. A large truck sat near the Kolkhoz office. Kretzky smoked with 2 NKVD nearby. The commander stood on the porch with an officer I didn't recognize. They began calling names alphabetically. People climbed into the back of the truck. Take care, Jonas, said Andrus's voice behind us. Goodbye, Mrs. Vilkas.
Goodbye, Andrus, said Mother, grasping his hands and kissing his cheeks. Take care of your mother, dear.
She wanted to come, but...
I understand. Give her my love, said Mother.
The NKVD continued reading names off the list. Write to me, okay, Jonas? Said Andrus.
I will, said Jonas. He extended his small hand for a handshake.
Take care of these two, okay? Your father and I are counting on you, said Andrus.
Jonas nodded. Andrus turned. His eyes found mine.
I'll see you, he said.
My face didn't wrinkle. I didn't utter a sound. But for the first time in months, I cried. Tears popped from their dry sockets and sailed down my cheeks in one quick stream. I looked away. The NKVD called the bald man's name.
Look at me, whispered Andrus, moving close. I'll see you, he said. Just think about that. Just think about me bringing you your drawings. Picture it, because I'll be there.
I nodded.
Vilkas, the NKVD called.
We walked toward the truck and climbed inside. I looked down at Andrus. He raked through his hair with his fingers. The engine turned and roared. I raised my hand in a wave goodbye. His lips formed the words, I'll see you. He nodded in confirmation. I nodded back.
The back gate slammed and I sat down. The truck lurched forward. Wind began to blow against my face. I pulled my coat closed and put my hands in my pockets. That's when I felt it. The stone. Andrus had slipped it into my pocket. I stood up to let him know I had found it. He was gone.
Part 3. Ice and Ashes. Chapter 63. We traveled all morning in the truck. The road squirreled a thin line hidden in the trees. Like Mother, I tried to think of the positive. I thought of Andrus. I could still hear his voice. At least we had left the commander and Kretzky behind. I hoped we would be somewhere near Krasnoyarsk, closer to Papa. The truck stopped next to a field. We were allowed to jump off and relieve ourselves in the grass. The NKVD began yelling within a matter of seconds. Devi! I knew that voice. I looked over. Kretzky. Late that afternoon, we reached a train station. A faded sign creaked in the wind. Bisk. Trucks littered the train yard. The scene was unlike the train station when we were deported. In Kaunas, back in June, we were frantic. Panic rose everywhere. People ran and screamed. Now masses of tired, gray people made their way slowly toward the train cars, like a group of exhausted ants marching toward a hill. "Everyone stand at the front of the door opening," instructed the bald man. "Look uncomfortable. Maybe they won't put more people in here and we'll have room to breathe." I stepped up into the train car. It was different from the previous car, longer. A lamp hung from above. The carriage smelled of sour body odor and urine. I missed the fresh air and scent of wood from the labor camp. We did as the bald man suggested and crowded near the door. It worked. Two groups of people were steered toward other cars. "This is filthy," said Mrs. Rimmis. "What did you expect, a luxury sleeper car?" said the bald man. They shoved a few more people into our car before slamming the door. A woman with two boys and an older man climbed in. A tall man stepped in and looked around nervously. A woman and her daughter were hoisted up. Jonas nudged my arm. The girl looked as yellow as a lemon, her eyes nothing more than swollen slits. Where had she been? The mother spoke in Lithuanian to her daughter. "Just another short trip and we'll be home, dear," said the girl's mother. Mother helped the woman with her luggage. The girl hacked and coughed. We were lucky. We had only 33 people in our car. We had room and light this time. We gave the lemon girl a plank to sleep on. Mother insisted that Jonas have one as well. I sat on the floor next to the girl with the dolly, whose hands were now empty. "Where's your doll?" I asked.
"Dead,"
said the girl with a hollow look in her eyes. "Oh."
"The NKVD killed her. Remember how they shot the woman with the baby? That's what they did to Liala, except they threw her in the air and shot her head off. Kind of like a pigeon."
"You must miss her a lot," I said.
"Well, I missed her at first. I kept crying and crying. A guard told me to stop crying. I tried, but I couldn't. He clobbered me in the head. See my scar?"
she said, pointing to a thick red fold on her forehead. Bastards. She was only a child.
"You couldn't stop crying either?" she asked.
"What?" she pointed to the scar above my eyebrow. "No, they hit me with a can of sardines," I said.
"Because you were crying?" she said.
"No, just for fun," I answered. She curled her finger toward me, beckoning me closer.
"Want to know a big secret?"
she asked.
"What's that?"
she leaned over and whispered in my ear.
"Mama says the NKVD are going to hell."
She leaned back.
"But you can't tell anyone. It's a secret, okay? You see, Liala, my dolly, she's up in heaven. She talks to me. She tells me things, so that's a secret. But Liala said I could tell you."
"I won't tell anyone,"
I said.
What's your name?
She asked. Lina, I said.
And your brother?
Jonas.
My name is Janina,
she said, continuing to chatter.
Your mama, she looks old now. My mama does too. And you like the boy who is waiting near the truck.
What?
The one who put something into your pocket. I saw. What did he give you?
I showed her the stone.
It's so sparkly. I think Liala would like it. Maybe you could give it to me.
No. It was a present. I think I better hold on to it for a while, I said. Mother sat down next to me.
Did you see the present Lina's boyfriend gave her?
Asked Janina. He's not my boyfriend. Was he my boyfriend? I wanted him to be my boyfriend. I showed Mother the stone.
I see it made its way back to you, she said. That's good luck. My dolly's dead, announced Janina. She's in heaven.
Mother nodded and patted Janina's arm.
Someone shut that kid up, said the bald man. You, the tall one, what do you know of the war?
The Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor. They bombed, said the man.
Pearl Harbor? They bombed America? Said Mrs. Remus.
When? Asked the bald man.
Months ago. Around Christmas. Yes, Christmas.
He repeated his words, a nervous tick. So the United States have declared war on Japan? Asked Mother.
Yes, along with Britain. Britain has also declared war.
Where did you come from? Asked the bald man.
Lithuania, said the man.
I know that, idiot. Where did you come from today?
Kalmanka, said the man. Yes, Kalmanka.
Kalmanka, eh? Was it a prison or a camp? Asked the bald man.
A camp. A camp. A potato farm. You?
A beet farm near Turacek, replied Mother. Were there all Lithuanians in your camp?
No, mostly Latvians, said the man. And Finns. Yes, Finns.
Finns. I had forgotten about Finland. I remembered the night Dr. Seltzer came to the house looking for Papa. The Soviets had invaded Finland.
It's only 30 kilometers from Leningrad, Elena, Dr. Seltzer had told Mother. Stalin wants to protect himself from the West.
Will the Finns negotiate? Asked Mother.
The Finns are strong people. They'll fight, said Dr. Seltzer.
Chapter 64. The train churned forward, the rhythm of the rails tormenting me, screeching and banging. They pulled me away from Andrus, further into an unknown. The metal lamp swayed above like a pendulum, illuminating hollow faces, throwing shadows throughout the carriage. Janina whispered to the ghost of her dead doll, giggling. The yellow girl hacked and wheezed next to Jonas. She spit up blood all over his back. Mother snatched Jonas off the plank. She tore off his shirt and threw it down the bathroom hole. It didn't seem necessary. We were all breathing the same air as the yellow girl. Phlegm and blood on a shirt couldn't be any more contagious.
I'm so sorry, sobbed the girl. I've ruined your shirt.
It's okay, said Jonas, hugging his naked torso. His scurvy spots hadn't entirely disappeared. Pink blotches dotted his emaciated rib cage. The tall man, the repeater, spoke sprightly, convinced of America. America. I wasn't convinced of anything except my yearning to see Papa, Andrus, and home. On the third night, I woke up. Something tapped on my chest. I opened my eyes. Janina's face hovered above mine, her eyes wide. The light swung back and forth behind her head.
Janina? What is it?
It's Liala.
Tell Liala it's time to sleep, I said, closing my eyes.
She can't sleep. She says the yellow girl is dead.
What?
Liala says she's dead. Can you check to see if her eyes are open? I'm scared to look.
I pulled Janina against me, laying her head on my chest.
Shh! Go to sleep.
She trembled in my arms. I listened. The coughing had stopped.
Shh. Time to sleep, Yanina.
I rocked her gently. I thought of Andrus. What was he doing back at the camp? Had he looked at my drawings? I reached into my pocket and wrapped my fingers around the stone. I saw him smiling, tugging my hat in the ration line. The yellow girl was dead. Streaks of dried blood ran from the corners of her mouth to her chin. The next day, the guards dragged her stiff body out of the train. Her mother jumped down after her, crying. A gunshot fired. A thud hit the dirt. A grieving mother was an annoyance. Ilyushka, the woman I despised, kept us alive on the train. We lived off the food she had given mother. We shared it with others. I drew Ilyushka's wide face and stalks of black hair, trying to steady my hand through the train's vibration. No one refused the water or gray slop in the buckets. We ate greedily, licking our palms and sucking under our dirty fingernails. Yanina's mother slept often. I could barely sleep even though I was exhausted. The noise and movement from the train kept me awake. I sat wondering where they were taking us and how I would let Papa know. Yanina tapped the bald man on the shoulder.
I heard you're a Jew, she said.
That's what you heard, eh? Said the bald man.
Is it true? Asked Yanina.
Yes. I heard you're a little brat. Is that true?
Yanina paused, thinking.
No, I don't think so. Did you know Hitler and the Nazis might kill the Jews? My mama said that.
Your mother's wrong. Hitler is killing the Jews.
But why?
Asked Jonas.
The Jews are the scapegoat for all of Germany's problems, said the bald man. Hitler's convinced racial purity is the answer. It's too complicated for children to understand.
So you're here with us rather than with the Nazis? Asked Jonas.
You think I'd choose this? Under Hitler or Stalin, this war will end us all. Lithuania is caught in the middle. You heard the man. The Japanese have bombed Pearl Harbor. The United States may already be allied with the Soviets. Enough talk. Be quiet, said the bald man.
We're going to America, said the repeater. America.
Chapter 65. After a week, the train stopped late at night. Mrs. Rimmis said she saw a sign that said Makarov. They herded us out of the carriages. The open air swirled around my face, clean, fresh. I breathed in through my nose and exhaled through my dry lips. The guards directed us toward a large building 400 yards away. We dragged our filthy belongings from the train. Mother collapsed in the dirt.
Lift her quickly, said Mrs. Rimmis, looking around for the guards. If they would shoot a grieving mother, they might shoot a woman with loose legs.
I'll be fine. I'm just tired, said Mother.
Mrs. Rimmis and I helped Mother walk. Jonas dragged our suitcases. Mother stumbled again near the building.
Dvai!
Two NKVD approached, clutching rifles. Mother wasn't moving fast enough. They marched toward us. Mother straightened up. One of the NKVD spit in the dirt. The other looked at her. My stomach dropped. Kretzky. He had traveled with us.
Nikolai,
Mother said weakly. Kretzky pointed in another direction. He marched away toward a group of people. The building felt large, like an enormous barn. There must have been 1,000 of us. We were too tired to speak. We fell to the ground on our belongings. My muscles released their clench. The stillness of the ground felt wonderful, as if a hand had stopped a metronome. The screeching of the rails had finally ended. Put my arm around my suitcase, hugging Dombey and Son. It was quiet. We lay in our rags and slept. Morning broke. I felt Yanina breathing, nestled against my back. Jonas sat on top of his suitcase. He nodded at me. I looked at Mother. She slept soundly, her face and arms on her suitcase.
She called him Nikolai, said Jonas.
What? I asked. Jonas began pacing.
Kretzky, did you hear her? Last night, she called him Nikolai.
Is that his first name? I asked.
Exactly. I don't know. How does she know?
Snapped Jonas.
Why did he come with us?
Jonas kicked at the dirt. The NKVD arrived with bread and buckets of mushroom soup. We woke Mother and dug in our bags for a cup or a dish.
They're preparing us. Preparing, said the repeater. We shall feast every day in America. Every day.
Why are they feeding us? I asked.
To strengthen us for work, said Jonas. Eat every last bit, instructed Mother.
After the meal, the guards began rounding up groups. Mother strained to hear. She laughed weakly.
We're going to bathe. We'll be able to bathe.
We scurried toward a large wooden bathhouse. Mother's stride had steadied. We were divided at the gate into male and female groups.
Wait for us, Mother told Jonas.
We were instructed to take off our clothes and give them to Siberian men working at the door. All modesty dissolved. The women quickly undressed. They wanted to be clean. I looked down, hesitating.
Hurry, Lina.
I didn't want them to touch me, to look at me, my arms folded over my breasts. Mother spoke to one of the men.
He says we must hurry, that this is a travel stop. A large group is coming later today. He says that Latvians, Estonians, and Ukrainians have already passed through, said Mother. It's okay, darling, really.
The men didn't seem to be paying any attention. Of course not. Our shrunken bodies appeared almost androgynous. I hadn't had a period in months. Nothing about me felt feminine. A piece of pork or a foamy beer would be more alluring to men. After our showers, we were put on a truck with our belongings. They drove us several kilometers through the woods until we arrived at the bank of the Angara River.
Why are we here? Asked Jonas.
Large wooden sheds dotted the bank. Tucked near the trees was a large NKVD building.
They're putting us on boats. Don't you see? We're going to America. America, said the repeater. We're traveling up the Angara, to the Lena, and then across the sea to the Bering Strait. The Bering Strait! The journey would take months, said the man who wound his watch.
America? How could we leave Papa behind in a prison in Krasnoyarsk? How would I get my drawings to him? And what about the war? What if other countries became allies with Stalin? I saw Anders's face when he told me we were on the list. Something about his expression told me we weren't going to America. Chapter 66. The boats were delayed. We waited on the stony banks of the Angara River for more than a week. They fed us barley porridge. I couldn't figure out why they were feeding us more than bread. It was not out of kindness. Our strength would be needed, but what for? We sat in the sun as if on vacation. I drew for Papa and wrote to Andris every day. I drew on small scraps of paper so as not